You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The last time I spoke to my next guest was in June 2023. I don't know what we spoke about, and it's not really very important. What is important is that I don't know what he is now. I don't know what he does now. I don't know who he's affiliated with now, and I need to find out, and I need to know his views on the world, which are always very forthright. With me, I'm pleased to say, is my old friend Davy Ruart, who's going to introduce himself by telling me exactly what he is. Who are you, Davy?
Meneer Willemsen, wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Long time, far too long. Well, you know, what has happened since? I'm still at the Efficient Group. I'm still the chief economist. I think so. At least I just walked out of a meeting, so I still got a job there.
Well, very good.
What has happened is that I'm not that much involved in the day-to-day management of the company anymore, but I'm still the director of the board of Efficient. We had some corporate action the last 2 years or so ago. I think the last time you and I spoke. And so I'm still involved there, but a little bit less involved in the management of the company than previously. But I'm still talking to clients. I'm still talking to our financial advisors, and I'm still talking to wonderful people like you. And I'm still trying to figure out what's going on in the world of politics and what's going on in the world of economics. So I think pretty much the same, just a little bit more relaxed.
Okay, good. I like the relaxed bit. World of politics and world of markets and everything else in the corporate world is something that we will delve into now. When we spoke last week and reintroduced ourselves to each other, you spoke to me about flying around the country in your own aeroplane, probably going to areas and places that are not exactly on the sort of speaker's map, are they? But you go out there and you impart your wisdom, Davy.
Yeah, so part of my job is to do, well, I do a lot of public speaking events, and I need to go and talk to clients as well and do sparkling speaking at various venues and things like, for example, Farmers' Days typically.
Yes.
And that is where my aeroplane comes in quite handy, because you can drive over the potholed, trying to drive there, but it's dangerous because of the collapse of South Africa's infrastructure. And of course, it takes a lot of time as well. So quite often it's easy simply to fly to these little faraway places. But I get the opportunity, of course, to meet amazing people at these relatively small towns all over South Africa. And for that, the plane comes in quite handy. So yeah, and I've been doing my pilot license the last, say, 2 years or so as well.
Nice little segue when you mentioned potholes and infrastructure, because we'll start with South Africa. If you had gone away in June 2023 and come back now, and I'd phoned you up and said, right, let's talk about South Africa, and you could say to me, well, of course, it's fantastic what's happened since I've been away. Everything's turned around. Infrastructure is good. The potholes are being fixed. I don't think that's the case, Davy.
I'm afraid no, Lindsay. I'm afraid no. But this is the trend, the last couple of years, in fact, the last, say, two decades or so, we simply continue on that trend. And I think there are three areas of collapse in South Africa, and that continues. There's one different, perhaps, but let me just get to the three areas of collapse. The one is the local authorities. The local authorities all got collapsed, and everything that goes with that. The same goes for the state-owned enterprises. There's a bit of an improvement, it seems to me, at Eskom, one of the state-owned enterprises, and also a bit of an improvement in the management of Transnet as well. But that is after they've been basically been gutted. In the meantime, the fiscal accounts deteriorated even further. This is despite every year the Minister of Finance telling us that the fiscal accounts, the debt levels will stabilize. That hasn't happened yet. It deteriorated even further. So the fiscal accounts are really in bad shape at the moment. And the only thing that I think really changed is that we hear more about corruption. So it's corruption as always, just more of it, it seems. But I also get the sense that the prosecuting authorities are getting a little bit more serious in getting all those crooks in overalls and in jail. But the corruption is simply becoming more blatant. But that is a major issue that we have in South Africa. And perhaps I can just make this comment. What I've realized, Lindsay, is that if we want to fix South Africa, we must start by getting rid of the ANC. You cannot reform the ANC. The ANC certainly is not going to reform itself. And I've got many reasons why I say we have to get rid of the ANC, not only because it is an incompetent and quite often corrupt organization, but it's simply because their ideology is wrong, and from that, the wrong policies and all of that. So, going back 3 years ago and seeing what South Africa was becoming 3 years ago, basically what the trend simply continued, and we are today South Africa is pretty much the same, just a little bit worse off.
Okay, we'll talk about the ANC in a moment. When it comes to corruption, I think one of the reasons that you think that there is more corruption is because people are not scared to report upon it. There are now people that will say, goodness me, I've just seen that corruption. I'm going to be a whistleblower and I'm going to tell people. And they tell people in the press, and the press blasts it all over the front page of their website or whatever it is. And it's just like in the United States. They talk about autism. Autism has been around forever. But now that it is reported upon more efficiently, then there's more autism. That's why there's more corruption in South Africa, I think. But I do agree that it's going on. As for the ANC, Davi, that has to be got rid of by evolution rather than a revolution. You can't just sweep it under the carpet. There would be a civil war, a mini civil war anyway. So it's got to evolve. And if it evolves, it has to evolve by people being interested in politics and getting rid of the corruption and the rubbish and the snakes that have driven your country into the ground over the decades.
And we're doing that. If you can see what's been happening to the election results recently, and if you see what the polls are telling us, I think we are rid of the ANC. It's a good thing. I think South Africa is in for a difficult time politically, because from now on, there's not going to be one single dominant political party. It will be coalitions. And we've got coalitions all over the place. In fact, on national level, we have a coalition at the moment. And the local authorities will have more coalitions. And in many instances, the coalitions will be led not by the ANC, which is the case in many instances, and perhaps in most instances currently. In many instances, the local authorities, the coalitions will be led by some of the opposition political parties, especially the DA, which is a good thing. So no, I'm not calling for a revolution, certainly not. But certainly what is happening in South Africa, and one institution that's still up and running, doing very well, is democracy. So we're still a democratic country, and and we're getting rid of the ANC. We're doing what must happen, and that is getting rid of the ANC, and that is what is indeed happening in South Africa. There's something on the whistleblowers, the comment you've made about the whistleblowers, yes. Mm-hmm. More people are starting to blow the whistle. Unfortunately, many of them are getting killed, literally. They are getting killed. And, I think we're making some progress here and there, where these criminal gangs are being charged and the criminal gangs are being investigated and so on. So there is some progress there. But being a whistleblower in South Africa is very, very dangerous. You can literally lose your job or your life.
Yeah. Well, yes, when I first came to South Africa, they said, Lindsay, Africa's not for sissies. It's a very corny old phrase, but it's not for, you can't be a sissy if you're a whistleblower or indeed a politician that goes against certain other politicians, because you always have to look over your shoulder. It's a very difficult thing, Davi, and I thought that after more than 30 years of democracy, things might have gone at a slightly faster clip, as we say in English, or a slightly faster pace, but it hasn't. I don't think it's going fast enough, the change. I thought that after 30 years, we would have been a little farther up the ladder of prosperity, if you like. I don't think that I'll be able to visit in my lifetime a truly prosperous South Africa that's benefiting from the rally in precious metals that we're seeing at the moment and certain other commodities. It's just not happening, Davi. It's still going into other people's pockets.
Yes, Lindsay, but you know, if you really talk about prosperity for a country and what it really means, then a rally in precious metals or rally or something that that country has a lot of, like oil or whatever the case may be, that is not the answer to long-term prosperity for any country. The real answer to long-term prosperity is that you have to start where it really matters, and that is with proper skills development in your country. And we do not have that. We do not have skilled people that can participate in a modern economy, because the quality of South Africa's education is quite often the worst in the world, despite massive amounts of money that we spend on that. So no, countries really become prosperous not on gold or oil or platinum. Countries really become prosperous on something else, and that's a value set and things like democracy and real freedom and, of course, high world-class skills. Those are the things that really are the only things that really assure long-term prosperity for a country. Short-term increase in some commodity prices usually only benefits a few individuals, and if you don't put all those other things in place, then the population at large is not going to benefit from that. So I'm afraid the other things are lacking in South Africa. It's all good and well to have nice gold price and nice commodity prices, and that certainly benefits a chunk of the South African population. But that is not the real answer to long-term economic growth. You need something else.
I think the point I'm trying to make with the precious metal rally is that, let's say that one day, all the things that you want, i.e. Skills development, and what I want, and that is jobs development, because the jobs data came out last week in horrendous numbers. Again, every time I look at them, I think, what is this, South Africa or some proper banana republic somewhere? But unfortunately, it is South Africa. I want there to be jobs and skills like you do. But I want the platform to be there so that when a rally in precious metals come, it's just the icing on the cake, and it helps the fiscus, and therefore it helps the treasury, etc. That's what I was trying to say, but I didn't say it properly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just on your jobs comment, I'm not so sure I agree with the job creation idea, because that is what we're trying to do in South Africa. We're trying to create jobs. But politicians misunderstand the thing about jobs completely. For example, we've got this program in South Africa to assist small-scale farmers. And I think that is not a very clever idea, because agriculture today is not a small-scale thing. It's not a subsistence farmer story. Agriculture today is a corporate business. If you want to be involved in agriculture, you have to corporatize that business. You have to have a board, and you're running on very small margins. It's a volume business, a real successful agriculture, like anything else. And unfortunately, we're trying to create jobs in inverted commas by helping small businesses and by helping small farmers and subsistence farmers. That's not the real answer. You cannot. There's absolutely no way that a subsistence farmer can ever compete with a big commercial farmer. And don't try to. Don't try to so-called create jobs. So I've got a problem with job creation, because politicians understand job creation as keeping people busy. That's not the answer. In fact, I don't care if jobs are not created. What is important to me is for the economy to grow. And once the economy starts growing and you put all these other things in place, then by magic, jobs will be created as well. But keeping people busy, getting people to wave flags next to the road where there's some construction happening, for example, that's not job creation. That's just simply keeping people busy. So forget about job creation and focus on economic growth. And then jobs by magic will follow from that as well.
I knew you'd say that. I knew you'd say the government often gets mixed up with what it's supposed to do. It's not supposed to create jobs. It's supposed to create the environment where jobs are created. I remember you saying that to me years ago. Do you remember that, Darby?
Of course I do. I've been beating this drum all along. And I've got some other issues as well. You know, like, for example, this inequality problem in South Africa. It is a so-called problem, like unemployment, poverty, and inequality. Inequality is a so-called problem because you do have very wealthy people, and there are very high levels of inequality in South Africa. But I don't care about inequality. As long as the poor are better off, then I'm happy. I don't care. In fact, the inequality, many successful places like the United States, are the inequality levels are higher there than, for example, on the European continent. But on a per capita basis, the Americans are much, much better off. So I don't care about inequality in South Africa as long as the poor are getting better off. And exactly the opposite is happening in South Africa. We have the unemployment numbers, but we also have exceptionally high levels of poverty. And do you know, Lindsay, that we have rising levels of absolute poverty in South Africa? And absolute poverty means that people are going to bed hungry. In fact, there's something like 1,000 children that died in state hospitals the past year, more than 1,000 kids that died of hunger. Children are dying of hunger in South Africa. And those are the kind of things that we should be concerned about. And if we can grow the economy and ease inequality, I don't care as long as the poor are better off. So put the emphasis where it should be, and the emphasis must be always on economic growth, and everything good will flow from that.
Well said. What about investing in South Africa? That's a completely different thing to 1,000 children dying in state hospitals and the state of the country and you and your stance towards inequality and jobs, etc. Let's put that aside because you've described it very well. Let's talk about investing in South Africa. Are you going out to those places and say, yes, there is still a viable model that allows you to invest in this country, and this is what I would recommend?
Should I invest and can I invest in South Africa? And the answer is without a doubt. I mean, we all know about the potential in South Africa and what we can potentially become and all that. I'm not going to repeat that. But purely from a financial market point of view, here are a couple of sitters. I mean, obvious places where you can put money and make a lot of money out of. So, for example, if you look at the equity market in South Africa, the equity market, we've had a beautiful run the last couple of weeks on the equity market, but the equity market is still behind most of its peers. The equity market in South Africa is still quite cheap. And remember, we have world-class companies listed on a JSE, and the JSE, if I'm not mistaken, relative to the size of the economy, is probably the biggest stock exchange in the world. So, but the JSE, so about 60, more than 60% of the revenue of the JSE is actually earned abroad. So we've got international companies that are listed in South Africa, and the JSE is very, very cheap. I would certainly look at the JSE. The second market that is exceptionally cheap in South Africa is the bond market, the capital market. The bonds in South Africa, in real terms, as far as I know, is the highest in the world. I mean, you can get a real return of 6-7% in South Africa. Where on earth can you get this? So for a foreigner, you can start off by buying the entrance into South Africa is very cheap because you buy a cheap currency, the rand. So that's very cheap. Secondly, you buy in a very, very well regulated and a very liquid market. And thirdly, you're buying into these amazing yields. I mean, it's a, as they say, no-brainer. And that's part of the reason why we've seen quite a nice return on the bonds recently and also in the equity market as well. Now, just imagine, Lindsay, just imagine if we can get the right government in place with the right macroeconomic policies and saying the right sort of things. We can see a run of 20% or 30% on a JSE. We can see the bond market rallying by 200 to 300 basis points. Just imagine what that is going to do to the economy. Of course, it will have a financial impact straight away, but it will spill over into the real economy as well. And everybody will benefit from that by just getting the right government in place with the right macroeconomic policies. The financial markets are waiting in South Africa. They are waiting for the right policies to be put in place. And then you're going to see some amazing returns and, of course, a benefit to the economy as a whole.
Yeah, waiting, waiting, waiting. Just imagine if those are the words that you've used in the last couple of minutes, Davi. I've heard them so many times before, but yes, there is always hope. Davi, I know you're in the Bushveld somewhere and you've got to go and speak to some people soon. So I just want to come up with my final question, which is going to cause a problem between us. We're going to argue. Donald Trump, please. Donald Trump's presidency, Donald Trump's administration, your views, if you would.
You know, Lindsay, I've listened to this guy a lot. Listened to Donald Trump, and I think to myself sometimes listening to him that this guy is absolutely brilliant. He says the most amazing things.
Ooh.
And then sometimes I listen to this guy, and I cannot believe my ears. So, Lindsay, Donald Trump is one of those guys. You cannot put him in any pigeonhole somewhere. He's just all over the place. And I think he's causing immense harm at many levels. But Donald Trump has broken a lot of things as well. And he's broken a lot of bad things, and he's broken a lot of good things as well. So the world's never, ever going to be the same again after Donald Trump. And there are many examples of things that he has broken, for the good and for the bad sometimes. But yeah, what a wild ride it has been with Donald Trump up to now. And I think the world is never, ever going to be the same again. So there are a few things that I think he should be credited for, and there are many things that I think he should be blamed for, things that went wrong. I think the tariffs, for example, he's known for his tariffs. That is just wrong. That is just wrong. But at the same time, you have to say that the American government is making a lot of money out of these tariffs. And you must also say that the inflationary pressures because of these tariffs that the economists were warning about, that hasn't materialized yet. So maybe Donald Trump, I don't believe in the tariffs, but maybe there's a little bit more to say about tariffs than what I thought initially. That's one example of something that Donald Trump changed, the way that we're trading internationally, and of course many other things as well. So Donald Trump, like him or not, Donald Trump changed the world.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right when you say he changed the world and will continue to change the world. We'll maybe expand upon him sometime in the future. Davi, thank you very much for making the time to chat to me. That was Davi Rutt, the Chief Economist at the Efficient Group and the Flying Speaker. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.